You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Hi, let's talk science. All right, actually, before we talk science, if you have not downloaded the YouVersion notes, please do. I'm going to be moving quickly because there's a lot of content today and it's important. And so if you have not done that, you can scan that QR code. We're doing it every week. Next week, we're starting a whole nother series. And I'm telling you, downloading the notes is the only option to actually follow what's going on. But anyway, let's talk science. So I want to talk about something that you probably, I know some of you are aware of, because you worked at a place that bottled water. But I want to talk about bottled water. And bottled water officially is defined as a water that comes from an approved source, meets all applicable federal and state standards, and it's sealed in a container. That's the extent of what qualifies something for bottled water. Interestingly enough, there are different types of bottled water. There's one type that's called mineral water. So if you get a bottle of water that says mineral water on it, what that means is that it emerges from a protected underground source that naturally contains at least 250 parts per million of total dissolved solids. So, and no additives can be added to it. So mineral water comes from a place that has minerals in it. Because I guess chewing on rocks while you drink is fun. Another kind of water is sparkling water. And sparkling water contains the same amount of carbon dioxide that it had emerging from the source. So it comes out of the ground with sparkling, and then that's what sparkling water is. Now, here's an interesting thing. Sparkling water, if to label it sparkling water, it has to come from a source that has carbon dioxide in it. But what they typically do is then remove the carbon dioxide in the process of bottling it and then put the carbon dioxide back into it. But anyway, that's what it says there. Spring water, which you're probably more familiar with. Let's see what we've got here. We've got, there's purified. Okay, there's spring. Here's spring water. There's spring water. That's purified, and that's purified drinking water. Okay, so spring water, which we've got one here and here, spring water comes from a spring. And interestingly enough, it has to be, it can be treated, but it has to have the same properties as it came from the spring. And the spring itself needs to be protected. It has to be a protected source so that nothing else can bother it. And then you've got purified water. And purified water is water that has undergone a treatment process to make it purified. And then you can add extra chemicals, and there's things you can do differently with your water. But what is interesting about bottled water, if it's spring water, which we've got Kersplash spring water here, so that means that this came from a spring. And if you look at the label, it says it came from a spring in Pennsylvania, in New Ringgold, Tower City, and Pine Grove. So spring water will always tell you where the spring is. This is Acadia spring water. It came from, it's got small parts, Salisbury Source Protected Springs in Whitehaven, Pennsylvania, Molleystown, Pennsylvania, and Tower City, Pennsylvania. So apparently Tower City is the place to go for spring water. So you got spring water, but then you've got purified water. And what's interesting about purified water, and the rule is this. If you live in an area where your municipal water source, meaning not a well, is purified, and it's purified according to the legal standards of your state, which if you have, you know, that's supposed to be the rule, you could literally go to your tap, open up your tap, put it in a bottle, and seal it, and sell it as bottled water, because that is considered purified water. But the purification process, they sometimes add things to it. So this is purified drinking water, which means it came from a tap somewhere, probably not someone's just sink. It was probably, like, you know, bigger. And it was, then they added flavor-enhancing, minerals. Flavor-enhancing minerals. So, again, minerals are things. That's great value. This is Giant Eagle. Minerals added for taste to their purified water. This Cursed Splash purified water does not have any minerals added. And this Acadia, oh, that's spring water. This Puragua purified water was processed by reverse osmosis. And the interesting thing about when it comes to purifying water, I know you guys are like, this is riveting. I'm so glad I came today. But purified water, what they'll do is they'll take this water from a source, whatever that source is, and they'll purify it in different ways. And one of the ways is through a process called reverse osmosis, where things are, the osmosis is reversed. So that's how that's done. Another option is, where do I have it? There's high-level filtration. But one of the things they'll often do is take the water and expose it to ultraviolet light. Now, technically, this is an ultraviolet light because you can see it. But anyway, they'll expose it to ultraviolet light, and when you bring the water into the light, it will kill the microorganisms in it. That's a sentence. Why do we care? Well, in 2023, in June, in a city in India, which I know you're probably like, India, okay, you know, some questionable things there, perhaps, with how they filter their water. But this is a municipal water source. It was a source of water that was supposed to have been purified. And 30 people were made ill because they drank water from this tap, this supposedly purified source that had microorganisms in it. And so they had these people, and then there are two more that were critically ill, and I'm not even sure what happened to them, whether they pulled through or not. But there were these microorganisms in the water, and the crazy thing about it is that all it would have taken was to expose that water to the light, to the ultraviolet light, and it would have killed the bacteria, the microorganisms inside of that the water. But instead, they didn't expose it to the light, and the microorganisms were killing people from the inside. And they were slowly dying. And so, if you have been here for any part of this series thus far, you know where we're going with this. See, some of us, most of us, all of us, have skeletons in our closet. Things that we have been hiding, that we think aren't bothering us, no one else is going to know about it, it's not a big deal. But meanwhile, it is a microorganism inside of you that you are hiding that is killing you, that is making you sick. And as we'll talk in a little bit, you think it's not affecting you, you think it's not affecting anyone else, but you're wrong. And the only way to deal with these skeletons that are hidden in the closet is to expose them to the light of Jesus. And the point this week as we wrap up this series is that we must expose our skeletons to the light. And one of the things that we've been I've been saying from the beginning is that this series is building on itself. Each part, and we're going to talk about all of those parts throughout the course of the morning. But I want you to know right now, as we've said, it's easy for you to be like, well, I'm not going to be here today. I would rather avoid today because this is where we're going. Because we're going to give you a chance to bring your skeletons into the light. And that's not going to be easy. But I can assure you that if you let the skeleton continue to fester inside without bringing it to the light, it's going to kill you. And again, we'll talk about what that looks like. But why, as we said before, this series came about, because there have been so many leaders and Christian examples and singers and musicians and Coldplay concerts, as we talked about multiple times, and it came up in the discussion guide, where people were exposed and it destroyed their ministry, it destroyed their lives, it destroyed their marriages, it destroyed their families. And meanwhile, those people were going, no, it's fine. It's hiding. This must be a woman's lab coat. It's facing the wrong way. It's hiding deep inside. It's deep in here. No one knows. It's not going to bother anybody. But it's killing you. It was killing them. And ultimately, it destroyed so many things. And so in order to deal with these skeletons, we must expose them to the light. And Kendra already read this passage this morning, but we're going to be looking in Ephesians chapter 5. And we'll turn on the house lights here if you have a paper Bible. But if you have the YouVersion app with the notes, it's right in front of you. And this thing is roasting, so I'm going to take it off. Did you know that buttons for a men's button one way and women button the other way? Did you know that? Okay. Because that's, yeah. So this is, I can't unbutton it because it's backwards to me. But we're going to look at this passage in Ephesians chapter 5. And what Paul is explaining in this passage is that you need to be afraid of the dark. We need to be afraid of the dark. Because the darkness where these things hide in the closet is a dangerous, dangerous place. And Paul is explaining that we should be afraid of the dark, but we don't need to be afraid of the dark because of what Jesus has done for us. And so there are two things we're going to talk about the light, and there are two things that we're going to talk about the dark. The first thing we're going to see is your position in the light. And this is in the first part of Ephesians chapter 5, verse 8. And it says this, "For you were once in darkness, but now you are light in the Lord." See, Paul wrote this letter to the Ephesians, to the church in Ephesus. And in January and February, we're probably going to do a whole series diving into this letter that Paul wrote. And into this church, he was saying, look, he's talking to followers of Jesus. And he says, as followers of Jesus, you are in the light of the Lord. You're not trapped in the darkness. As we talked a couple weeks ago, you're not trapped under the weight of your sin. As we said that one week, some of you have the weight has been lifted by Jesus and you're still laying there going, I can't breathe, and there's nothing on you. And he says, you as followers of Jesus, if you have made the decision to believe in Jesus' death on the cross to take away the sin, you are in the light. You are in the light. He has taken you. Jesus has taken you out of the darkness. You have been freed from the chains of your sin. Like multiple analogies, metaphors here. You have been set free. The pardon has been issued. The prison door is open. And you're still sitting on that bed going, I like it here, or something. You're free. Get out. You are now in the light of the Lord as a follower of Jesus. So that's, he's setting this up by saying, look, you don't have to be there. You don't have to be in the darkness. Because, you know, we have that victim mentality. Well, I can't control them. I can't get over. I can't. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. And Jesus says, no. Paul says, no, Jesus has taken you. You're in the light now. So that's your position in the light. Then he goes on and talks about what your action by the light should be. So if you're in the light, what does that look like? And he goes on in the second part of verse 8 into verse 10 and says, for you're once in darkness, but not in the light of the world. He says, live as children of light. Okay, thanks, Paul. Well, what does that mean? Well, I'm glad you asked. For the fruit of the light consists in all goodness, righteousness, and truth. We did a series called Fruit. We did a series called Rotten. You can find that on the slideshow on our website. But he was saying, like, if you're living in the light, you're going to produce fruit that looks like that. Well, what is it? It's righteousness, he says. It's goodness first, he says. And goodness is doing good things, being not a good person, like in the sense of you're going to be in heaven because you're good, but doing things that are good. He says, by righteousness. What is righteousness? Righteousness is meaning you're going to follow this higher standard. You're going to live according to what God says is right and wrong. And again, we talked about some of that last week. And he says it in truth. And the Greek word for truth is a nice word. It's aletheia. It's the name of our second daughter. That's why. Not because she's always truthful. Actually, of all the kids, she was really good as a little one of finding the way around it. She was a debater. Like, eat your vegetables. Well, the way I see it is, no, wait a second, hold on. We're not debating this. Anyway, but truth, like, what is right? What is true? He says, if you're going to be in the light, you need to live like it. And that means you're not living according to the things from the darkness. You're not living according to sin. You're not living according to what's bad. You're not living according to what's wrong. And you're not living according to what's false or lies. And what's really cool about this is then he says, and find out, this is the NIV, and find out what pleases the Lord. And this phrase, find out, it means to prove, to test, to see if it's real. And what Paul is saying here, and it's so cool, because I know many people have talked about this. I remember growing up, this was one of the big questions. You know, what's God's will for my life? And how do I know what God's will is for my life? Paul tells you what God's will is for your life. Live good, right, and true lives. And then you'll find out. Like, that's what pleases the Lord. Then you'll know. Then you'll realize that that's what honors God. God is not honored by the skeletons we have hiding in our closet. God is not honored by the things that we do to kind of bend the truth. It's living good, right, and true lives is what honors God. And so Paul is saying, look, that is what you do. If you're in the light, that's how you should be living. Just to clarify things, get everything on the baseline. But then he says, let's talk about the opposite side of it. He talks about the corruption of the dark. And he explains the dark is not a good place to be. And yet as followers of Jesus, many of us are okay with that. I mean, some things, no, of course, I'll talk about that. I'll be honest about that. But don't start, no, I'll leave this one in the dark. It's better there. It belongs there. He goes on and says, have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness. Again, now he's talking about fruitlessness. Now he's on the rotten side of things. Before he was talking about fruit, and it, you know, you want, if you go to an apple tree, you want it to produce, you know, apples. And that's what you want. But if your apple tree isn't producing apples, then you got nothing. And he says, have nothing to do with fruitless deeds of darkness, but rather expose them. And we'll come back to that in a second. And he goes on and says, look, what is darkness? Why should we be afraid of the dark? Why is darkness such a bad thing? He's like, it is so bad that I'm not even going to talk about it. I'm not even going to bring up those things because I don't want to even expose you to those things. It's shameful even to mention what the disobedient do in secret. He says the darkness is messed up. The darkness is microorganisms inside of you, eating you up, killing you from within. And you're like puking and diarrhea and all of that stuff going, oh, everything's fine. No, because you're dying from within. So Paul says, look, have nothing to do with that. It's corrupt. The darkness is fruitless. The sin who will not be named. That's what Paul could use there if you're a Harry Potter fan. The sin who will not be named destroys believers from within. It's corrupt. It's an awful place to be. And again, he's saying that we shouldn't be hanging out in the dark. We shouldn't allow things to hide in the dark. It's an awful place. And we're like, no, it's cool. No, it's not cool. It's awful. And then he goes on and explains the solution for the dark. Okay, so maybe you're stuck in the dark. Maybe you're okay, yeah, I don't need to be here anymore. Because if you're not a follower of Jesus, you are in the dark. The only way you can come out into the light, as we saw in the intro video every week, as we talked about a couple weeks ago with the weights, is for Jesus to lift the weights, is for Jesus to bring you into the light. But as Christ followers, there is a solution for us because we don't need to be in the darkness anymore. And this is what Paul shares in the last part of the verse there, the last part of the passage. He says, again, we already said a moment ago, have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness, but rather expose them. And then he says a little bit later, but everything exposed by the light becomes visible. So wait, when something's in the light, I can see it? Yes. And the cool thing about this phrase visible, this word visible, this is all written in Greek. That was the original language they spoke. It's been translated to English by amazing scholars. And I don't have time to get into that, based on some really cool evidence. But this word visible and this idea of being exposed says when you bring it into the light, you kind of realize, wait, that really isn't a good thing. Or you see it really, it's not as big of an issue as I once thought it was. Years ago, there was this ride, I guess you call it a ride. It was a show ride thing at Epcot Center back when we could afford to go there 25 years ago on our honeymoon. And it was called Alien Encounter. And to this day, it is the scariest thing I have ever done. Has anyone old enough to remember Alien Encounter at Epcot Center? Tomorrowland. It was in Tomorrowland. What it was is you went into this room and it was kind of set up like a lab. And the theme of this show, whatever you want to call it, was that these scientists had just discovered a portal to space. Because, you know. And so in front, there's like live people, humans, they're sharing us, showing us how to, you know, they're going to use this portal, and it's amazing. And they're going to try to beam some. We're all getting to be a part of the experiment for the first time, and we're all sitting in our chairs in this big circle looking down in the middle and this lab thing. And they're like, okay, here we go, you know, and they start, and boom, you know, all the lights flash, and boom, they bring an alien, a scary-looking alien, into their big glass tube. And they're like, don't worry, folks, it's safe. It's all good. It's not going anywhere. And they're like, isn't this amazing? Look at our technology. Well, then suddenly, the alien smashes the glass, and we start to hear the crack, but then the power goes out. And then you are in pitch darkness for the rest of the time. And the whole room is set up where you have speakers on each side, and you've got sprayers right here, and you've got heaters right here, and the seats rumble, and the floor moves. And so they're like, oh no! You hear that one of the scientists, the alien's right next to you! And you hear this, you feel the footsteps, and then you feel it and hear it, the heat as it's breathing into your ear. And it's pitch dark. And then it runs somewhere out. And I mean, it is super, super scary. And I remember watching this video years later where they turned on the lights to show what's happening. Nothing. There's nothing there. But our imaginations tend to run wild. And that's sort of what Paul's saying here. He's like, look, guys, these things that you think you need to keep secret, that they're okay, bring them into the light, and then they're visible. And then you realize, you know what, this isn't that big of a deal. Or I don't want to say big of a deal, because this is a big deal. But it's not something you need to be afraid of. We need to be more afraid of Jesus and God than of our little petty sins. And they might hurt, and they might be challenging to bring into the light. But when you expose them to the light, you're like, wow, you know what? There is something about freedom. And I can guarantee there are some of you listening, online, watching, they're in this room, whatever, that have been, some of you have been waiting for today, scared to death, because you're afraid you're going to have to bring something into the light. And some of you that are scared to death are also really hoping that you can do it. Because you have been hiding this thing and you want to be done. You want to stop having to hide. You want to stop allowing this thing in the darkness to eat away at you. And that's scary. That's why Paul says, look, When you expose it to the light, it becomes visible, and everything that is illuminated becomes a light. And then I love this passage, this little quote here that Paul adds. He says, that's why it's said, wake up, sleeper, rise from the dead. He's saying, look, wake up. The word wake up, the phrase there means like that. You know, if you're asleep, and you're like, hey, wake up. Okay. And I would say that to you. Guys, wake up. Wake up. It's time to deal with this stuff. That's what he's saying. Wake up. He says, and rise from the dead. Get out of the darkness. You are not dead anymore. We sang that song a couple weeks ago when we talked about this. You know, why are we, you weren't made to be tending a grave. Get away from the death. Get out of the grave. And then he says, and when you do that, Christ will shine on you. It's beautiful. He's like, look, when you bring your skeletons into the light, when you bring your sin into the light, you're not alone. Christ is right there shining on you and saying, yes, this is why I died. I'm the hope that you need. I'm the light that you need. And so that's what Paul talks about as the solution. And week one, we talked about the fact that, you know what, and I said, not some, not most, but all of us have skeletons. Because we're all in the same boat. And if you remember, the very end of week one, I kind of gave a list of suggested skeletons. And I've got that here again. But I want to challenge us or reflect on not just the things that we're hiding, but how do we respond? How do we deal with the solution? How do we expose them to the light? And this is that same list. And maybe your list was past, on that list was past regrets. Maybe that's the skeleton you're dealing with. Things you did in the past. And if that's what it is, expose it to the light and see how God has forgiven you. Past regrets, expose it to the light and see how God has forgiven you. Porn problem, expose it to the light and see how God heals your marriage, your future marriage, You have a gambling problem? Expose it to the light and see how God is the one that always provides for your finances. Do you have a worry problem? Expose it to the light and see how God is always faithful to you. You're struggling with drinking or alcoholism? Expose it to the light and see how God can bear your burdens instead of medicating. Are you dealing with drugs or addiction? Expose it to the light and see how God will always satisfy you. Are you dealing with emotional struggles? Expose it to the light and see how God can calm you from within. Are you dealing with insecurity? Expose it to the light and see how God is your strength. Gossip? Expose it to the light and see that God calls you His child. And you don't need to talk to prove that you're better than other people, because you're His child. Past hurts? Expose it to the light and see how God heals you like unlike any other way. Failures, mistakes? Expose it to the light and see how God has forgiven your past, present, and future through Jesus. Eating disorders, expose it to the light and see how God is your identity and your self-image. Pride, superiority, expose it to the light and see how God humbled Himself on the cross for you. Anger, expose it to the light and see how God can be your peace. Relationship problems, expose them to the light and see how God can be the one to fix your relationships. Greed, materialism, expose it to the light and see how God can be your source of satisfaction. And maybe we talk kind of that summary statement of idols that replace God, these things that we make more important than Him in our lives. Expose those idols to the light and see how God is far greater than anything else. So in order to deal with our sin, in order to deal with our skeletons, and if you're human, which you are, and if you have a skeleton in the closet, which you do, our natural human sinful response to this is like, it's going to be okay. I can deal with this. I can figure this out. I can fix it. And as we said on week two, you're under those weights thinking, oh, I'm good. I got this. I could have lived it. And you can't. We must expose our skeletons to the light. So, before we get to that point, I want to let you see inside my brain. Maybe your brain is the same way, but these are some of the things that would go on in my sinful brain and have gone on in my sinful brain over the course of my 48 years of life. Yeah, it's a hard time tracking that. But some of the questions and the natural thought in my brain that might be in your brain, maybe I'm wrong, but there's this thought of like, okay, yeah, we have to expose them to the light, but I'm managing so far, so why bring it into the light? Why cause this problem? Why make this an issue? Why stir the pot? I'm managing, I've got it under control. Why do we want to do this? And I'd like to suggest five things. Which is a lot. It's more than you're supposed to do in a sermon, but that's okay. My brain has five things in it. The first reason we should bring it into the light is because God already knows. See, there's this part of us that thinks like, yeah, I'm hiding it. Like, God already knows. So you're not like the one person that matters the most is the one that knows. And get this, right? He knows, and He still loves you. And not just He still loves you, because of your sin, He loves you. As we looked at, I don't know what week that was, in Romans 5:8, the Message version said, He loves us, He died for us. The Message says, while we were of no use whatever to Him. I love that. While we were no use whatever to Him. Like, He still died for us. And He still loves us. And if Hebrews 4:13 says this, it says, nothing, okay, can you say, like, that word with me on count of three? One, two, three. Nothing. Okay, so that means nothing in all creation is hidden from God. Everything is naked and exposed before His eyes. And That's a scary phrase. Like, think about it. I mean, not too much. But like, would you want to be naked and exposed in just an instant? Because that's what we are before God. And He is the one to whom we are accountable. So yeah, we are screwing up our relationships with our families. We're screwing up other issues with our jobs and things like that. But ultimately, we're accountable to God. And He knows it all. And then over in, there's another verse here over in Psalm 90. And this was a psalm that was written by Moses. We did this multiple series about summers of psalms. This was written by Moses. And he says this, and I love the way it's worded because we love, like, yeah, God knows what I did yesterday. And He watched me as I was driving down the street. And He watched me as I was, you know, eating breakfast this morning. And He watched me when I was working the other day. And we like to kind of think of God as like He's got a set of binoculars. And He's like, yeah, okay, I'm keeping an eye. But Moses says, you spread out our sins before you. They're all before Him. And then he says, our secret sins. And you see them all. They're all before God. There is nothing that is hidden from God. And that's called God's omniscience. God knows everything. And we did a series called I, God, a billion years ago. But you can find that on our website where we talked about God, the attributes of God. And one of them was His omniscience, that God knows everything. But why do we want to bring into light? Because God knows it all. He already knows. You're not hiding. God's not like, oh, what? Never mind. Jesus does not count for you. You're done. Go to hell. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. That's not the way Jesus works. He knows. God knows everything. And He still intentionally died for us because of our sin. So maybe that's one of the questions. Like, oh, well, no, God already knows. Another reason you should bring into the light. Now we're going to get a little heavy, a little personal. Because you reap what you sow. And honestly, this is a farming metaphor, and I know it less as a farming metaphor than just as the concept of whatever you do, you're going to have to deal with the consequences. And Paul writes to the church in Galatia, in Galatians 6, 7 through 8. He starts out with, hey, idiot. Yeah, you. Don't be deceived here. Don't think you're too smart here. Don't be deceived. God cannot be mocked. You're not going to, God's not like, oh, I didn't see that one. Whoa, you beat me. You win. He says, no, why do we think that? He says, God cannot be mocked. A man or a human, so no, ladies aren't like, hey, I'm cool, I'm out of this one. No, a man, meaning a person, reaps what he sows. Meaning, whatever you're doing, whatever you're hiding in the closet, there are consequences. There are things that are happening and affecting you. And he goes on and says, whoever sows to please their flesh, whoever is hiding skeletons in the closet, will reap destruction. That's going to be the result of these things that you're hiding. Destruction. But he says, whoever sows to please the Spirit, to live right, good, and true lives, from the Spirit will reap eternal life. Paul says, you're gonna deal with the consequences. And you might be thinking like, no, it's okay. I'm cool. Nobody found out yet. We'll get to that in a moment. But the thing about God is that God is just. He's not going to bend the rules and be like, oh, okay, we'll fudge this one for you. Hiding skeletons, it's going to affect you. It will. Your sin will affect you. And you might think it's not affecting anyone, but it is. It's affecting those around you. And you're like, no, it's not about, I would be willing to bet that you're wrong. Because like, oh, I got my anger under control. Let me ask your kids. Oh, I don't gossip about anything. Let me ask your coworkers. I don't have a problem with porn. Okay, let me see your browser history. It's affecting those around you. It's affecting your spouse. It's affecting your kids. It's affecting your work. And it's affecting your ministry. And that's why we're doing this series here in church, talking about hard things. Because you know what? I don't want MC3 or the Church of Jesus Christ, which is more important than even our little thing here, to suffer because people are like, oh, there's another one of those Christians lying about how they're living. Another one of those hypocrites, a bunch of fakes. Because you will reap what you sow. It's affecting people. You don't die from contaminated water without those around you watching you slip away. Like, maybe it's just like, oh no, I had to go to the bathroom a lot. It's okay. But eventually the signs will show. And that's what happens. The longer we hide these skeletons in our closet, the more the contamination affects us and affects those around us. Your hidden skeletons are taking their toll, at the very least, on you. And here's the thing, and again, thinking about my brain, when you hide your skeletons, you live with jump scares every day. And, you know, if you don't know what a jump scare is, play Five Nights at Freddy's or something, I don't know. But jump scare is the classic moment. I wouldn't recommend it. It's really creepy. But jump scares are that moment where like, everything's quiet. Bah! Like that. Yeah, see? I gotcha. The TV's even flashed. Wow, like that's what a jump scare is. And when you're hiding sin, you live with that jump scare every moment because you're afraid, wait, am I going to be discovered? Am I going to be found out? Wait, I loaned my phone to them. What if they see who I was texting? Because that person, the things I said to them, they weren't my spouse. Wait, did I remember to clear the browser on my laptop at work? Did anyone see me coming out of there? Did my neighbors hear what I just said to them? What I yelled to my family? And we live with that thing, and that's what Paul is saying. Like, look, you're not going to mock God. You're going to reap what you sow. So let's get it out, because you're still dealing with the consequences, and even more so with them hiding. Another question or another reason why bring into the light? This is a hard one. Because you will be exposed. It's going to come out. There's this passage in Numbers chapter 32, and we did a series called Stuck last winter, looking at the book of Numbers. And in this particular spot was the tribe of Reuben and Gad. Am I get the right tribes? Yeah. Reuben and Gad were two of the tribes of Israel, and they were getting ready to go into the land and take the promised land that God had given them. But they were like, you know, we really like this side of the Jordan, the east side of the Jordan. It's not the promised land, but can we chill here? Can we set up camp? Can we live here? And God, through Moses, said, yeah, you can do that, but you must go fight alongside your brothers when it comes time to go into the land. You can live here, but you can't just stay here and be like, see you guys, good luck. You have to go with them. And he shares this statement. He says, but what if you fail to do your duty? Then you will be sinning against the Lord. And he says, and you may be sure that your sin will be discovered. It will be brought out into the open. Your sin will be exposed. You think you're getting away with it, but that's the stupid thing or the deceptive thing about sin. Is that we're like, oh, I'm cool with this. Sin's like, yeah, keep thinking that. That's good. That's good. Keep hiding this thing. Let it fester. Because right now it's just eating you up from the inside. And you know what? When the time's right, it's going to come out and I'm going to destroy you. I'm going to destroy your family. I'm going to destroy your kids. I'm going to destroy your job. Oh, and by the way, I'm taking down your church with you. It will be exposed. It's eating you up. You have to worry that all your lies line up. And it's going to come out. And it's going to come out some way. It will. And maybe it's a comment made by your kid at school. Oh, my dad did this. What did your dad do? That's out. Maybe you forgot to close a window on your computer. Somebody discovers it. Or maybe there's literally a giant spotlight at a Coldplay concert that exposes your affair. But it will come out. And here's the important question. And I remember Andy Stanley talking about this. Like, someday, some of us are closer, I guess everybody has a story to tell, but someday you're going to tell a story to your grandkids, probably. And the question is what story do you want to tell them? So, Dad, how come Mom left you and you were fired from your job? And now, Granddad, now that some of the kids don't even talk to you? Well, I had this sin that I was hiding, and I was getting away with it, I thought. Mom, hey, I'm glad they let you talk. How long are you allowed to talk from the prison cell? Like, and those are extremes. But I think all of us are part of those stories. And when you're at the end of your life, or when your grandkids or whatever are asking about how you live, what story do you want to tell? Do you want to tell them about how you hid things and they finally came out and ruined everything? Or maybe that story is, you know what, I was hiding something, and on October 26th, I brought it into the light and released it and let God cleanse me and God deal with it. And man, let me tell you about the things that are going on now. And about how we grew as a family, and how we all came closer to Christ, and now all of your siblings and your cousins and my nieces and nephews, like, they're all following Jesus, and man, the people that we changed, and how we made a difference in this community, and the hearts, and my job, they love it because I'm such a great employee, like, just all these things. Because if you don't, you will be exposed. All right, we need to keep going. Another question is, maybe why bring it to light? Because confession brings healing. As we said, when you hide these things, they're eating you up from within. And I think some of us just we'd love to be done with the hiding. We'd love to be done with it. James says this, and this is really important. James says, therefore, confess your sins, expose your sins, your skeletons, to each other. And we talked about that last week, about taking a knee. He says, it's not a matter of just saying them or being like, okay, I'm done. We need to share this. We need people to come alongside. We need people to take a knee with us and say, look, I'm with you. I'm going to respond with eyes of grace to this situation. He says, confess your sins to each other and pray for each other. Why? So that you may be healed. There's healing in confession. It just gets it out there. There's no more hiding. There's no more digestive issues from all those microorganisms eating you up from within. He says the prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective. Again, you don't have to worry about all your stories lining up. Did I tell them the same story about where I was last week that I told them? Did I tell them I was texting them, but instead, do they? Author Mike Foster once said about this idea of lies and deception, he said, if you tell the truth, you don't need to remember anything. And some of you are living around going like, okay, I said that to them. How did I tell them? Because I don't want them to think, and I said I went to the store, but they talk to them and find out that, well, I told them that I went to, you know, to the, I don't know, wherever else you go, to McDonald's. I was going to say the record store. I don't know where that came from. Because you're worried about, is this truth going to find out? But confession brings healing. You don't have to remember anything if you just tell the truth. Where were you last week? I was talking to that person I shouldn't have been talking. Okay. There's nowhere to go with that. Are you tired of the fight to hide? Share your skeleton. And we're going to have an opportunity for people to take a knee with you. And then finally, why bring it into the light? And this kind of brings us back to week two of the series, is because God will forgive. And if you weren't here on week two, and we talked about this idea of weight and holding the weights and thinking that you can lift it, and if it's more than you can lift, you're just going to suffocate under the weight of your sin. And some of you still, like a number of you that week, came forward and said, I'm giving my life to Jesus because I believe that he did take the weight off of me. He died on the cross to take that weight from me. But some of you maybe didn't make that decision yet. And you're still not sure, like, I don't know, this was really bad. But I want you to know that God will forgive. And in 1 John 1, John says this, and he's not just talking about specific unconfessed sin. He's talking about sin, like we are sinners. He says, if we claim we have no sin, we are only fooling ourselves and not living in the truth. If you're saying, like, oh, I'm not a sinner, now you're lying to yourself. You are a sinner. But if we confess our sins to him, if we say, Jesus, I am a sinner, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and cleanse us from all wickedness. He says, look, if we bring him out, God's going to be like, I forgive you. That's why Jesus went to the cross. That's why my son went to the cross for you. But if you're like, I'm not a sinner, I don't know, need you, God. Well, Paul says, or sorry, John says, if we claim we have not sinned, we're calling God a liar. God, you're a liar. And showing that his word has no place in our hearts. So if you think that God won't forgive, you're wrong. He will. And if you think you're not a sinner, you're a liar, which, again, therefore makes you a sinner because you lied. But those are some reasons. God needs to do the heavy lifting. He will, but you must ask. Bring your sin into the light and let God forgive you. So we must expose our skeletons to the light. So we're going to do, I want to give you four steps. Four steps of what's going to happen now for the next 15, 20, 30, 45, 2 hours on. And I'm going to explain the steps to you so you know what you're getting into before you do it. Because I don't want you to feel like you're deceived. I went to a concert recently where I felt like they were like, you're going to sponsor a child without you even knowing that you just signed up to do that. And it was a little sketchy. Four steps. First step is that everyone you has a piece of paper with a stupid skeleton picture on it, on your chair. And there's probably a pen around you, but a good chance it doesn't work. But that skeleton, that's your skeleton. That's what you've got in your closet. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to explain the steps for you, so follow me before we do it. But you're going to write on your skeleton. You're going to write down the skeleton that you need to bring into the light. And then, okay, then once we've given you a chance to write those down, you're going to have a chance. There's going to be light right here. Not yet, but there's going to be. And so the second step is you're going to take your piece of paper with your skeleton and you're going to come up front and you're going to place it in the light. And then I'd like you to kind of pull off to the side a little bit so other people can get to the light. But then I want you to stay. That's step three. I want you to stay there. Kneel down. Pray. Whatever it is that you need to do, say, God, I'm giving this to you. Just stay there and pray. And we're going to have a chance. We're going to wrap up with a song, a worship song at the end. So that's step three, is stay to pray. And then this fourth step that I'm asking kind of all of us is that if you see someone up front that's a close relationship, a close friend, whatever to you, I'd like you to go up and take a knee with them. And so maybe, you know, your spouse goes up and you want to go up and just be with them. Maybe together you both are like, hey, we both have skeletons. Let's go together. If one of your kids comes up, mom or dad, maybe come up and take a knee with them. To say, I'm with you. And you know what? You might hear and see horrible, horrible, challenging things. But we're bringing them into the light. And you need to give them eyes of grace. Because that's what God gave to us. And again, if it's someone in your prime group and there's no one there, come up with them. And it's maybe a close brother or sister in Christ. Now, I just want to be clear. We're not looking for a crowd. I don't want like multiple around one person. Like if someone is with them, that's cool. We don't want like 13 people surrounding one person. Just one. And again, maybe there's something that you need to bring up and you want to grab someone's hand and say, I need to share something. Can you come with me? But that's what we're going to do. So step one, you're going to write it down. Step two, you're going to bring it up front. Step three, you're going to stay and kneel. And if we need to fill the aisle with people kneeling and praying, fill the front, we can. Fill the front, we can. That's step three. And step four, if you see someone up front that you have a relationship with, that you need to be up there, and I mean appropriately, that you need to go up with them, please take a knee with them. Does that make sense? So right now, what is it that God is laying on your heart? What is it that God has been stirring up within you this entire series that you need to bring to Jesus? So we're leaving these lights on right now, and just write that down. And again, full disclosure, the person that's coming up with you is going to see this. We're not hiding. We're not just going like, yeah, I gave that up and I'm good because I'm going to keep trying to hide it. I'm going to keep trying to deal with it. For me, when I was in fifth grade, we found out that someone had put porn magazines all over the playground in our neighborhood. I don't know, like that was back before the internet. Like that was the only way to see something like that. And I remember all, like, did you go check out the playground? Did you go check out the playground? So in fifth grade, I was exposed to that. And I had just struggle with porn after that. It was not easy. It was like, to be honest, it was way easier than it is today. Or sorry, way easier to deal with because you had to have, you know, my friend's uncle had a stash of magazines. And I struggled with that. And then eventually I remember the day that I really brought it before the light was when Kendra and I were engaged. And we went on this long walk. And I shared it all. And how it affected my relationships with other people. And she shared some of her skeletons that were in the closet. And we were just completely vulnerable in front of each other. And I would love to say that, you know what? Ever since that moment, I don't deal with lust or struggle. No, it is a fight all the time. And it's conversations saying, Kendra, I don't want to watch that. Or Kendra, this thing came up and I turned it off. But I want you to know that I did not do that. And there are times where I'm like, Kendra, dude, an ad popped up that doesn't make any sense. Why would that be popping up there? And instead of clicking away, I stared at it for a moment. Because I'm not done. But that's one of my struggles. That's what my skeleton would be. And I'm just saying that because, you know, we're all in the same boat. We all have our struggles. And in order to bring it into the light is how we really begin to be healed. So I'm looking, if you're still writing, because in a second you're not going to be able to see. And this isn't like, hey, I'm cooler than you because I'm going up front and you're not. And this isn't you sitting back saying, I'm not going up front because I'm perfect. We're done with that junk. Get that crap out of here. Like, if that's your attitude, please, there's where you can go expose it to the light, outside. That stuff that's killing us from within. And by the way, this might just be chaos because we're all just bringing our junk. That's beautiful. So, Sarah, I think everyone is finished writing. Would you please give us the light? So there it is. Whenever you're ready, you come up. Place your skeleton in the light. And then just find a spot to pray. Spot, you're blocking people. Kirk, can I send you into the middle here? You guys come into the middle a little more. There you go. Thank you. want to give you a second. If there's someone next to you that you need to pray with, talk to, just take a moment to let them know you're with them. Taking a knee with them. Let me say, just bringing it up front, it's probably the easy part. The hard part is going to be talking with the people you're with as we leave. Talking with the person that's with you now and telling them what it is that, if they didn't already see it, what it is that you need to share, that you bring into the light. Father, we are here in one big boat. We are all in this together. We all have our skeletons in the closet. In this moment, we bring them before you. We bring them before your Son, Jesus, and bring them into the light that you have provided for us. The light that you have given us by taking the weight of sin off of us. And God, I pray that this moment is a moment, that this is a mark, that this is a flag in the ground of the day that things changed, of the day that things were different, because we stopped hiding whatever that skeleton or skeletons were in our closet and we surrendered them to you. And God, thank you for Jesus. Thank you for dying for these skeletons. And thank you, even as we just read, that by waking up, rising from the dead, your light is shining on us. And we thank you for that. God, and I thank you for the people that we are with right now, that are with us right now, that have taken a knee with us to say that they're here, to say that I'm with you, I understand, I've been there, I'm human, and I'm broken too. And I pray that as these relationships, as we leave this room, would move beyond just a piece of paper on the floor, but move into steps, and I don't even know what that looks like, God, but you do. Steps of healing, steps of recovery, steps of dealing with the sin, steps of creating barriers and obstacles so that we don't fall back into this. Changes in our relationships with our wives and our husbands, changes in the way we parent our kids, changes in the way we love our parents, changes in the way we do our jobs. And God, ultimately, changes in the way we represent you to this world as fallen sinners, broken, full of just decay, but forgiven by Jesus. Forgiven by you on that cross. And so, God, we thank you for this moment. We thank you for the opportunity that we have just to bring it before you, that we don't have to hide any longer. Thank you for the freedom that is here. And God, we recognize that we're surrendering this to you. We're giving it to you. We're giving everything to you because you are the one that is worthy of everything. And you are the one that is with us, that has died for us, and that rose again to conquer these skeletons that are in the light right now. And so, God, we want to continue to give to you and worship you by giving all to you. In Jesus' name.